Even when we don't want to, we often notice them, desperate, frantic, disheveled. They're the ones at the airline ticket counter. They're bulging suitcases unzipped. Their belongings all a tumble. Personal items laid bare to the prying eyes of the world as they shift contents from bag to bag, trying to lighten it below the airline's luggage weight limit. They're cramming various items into their carry-on, itself already swollen and strained, hoping to avoid an exorbitant charge. Then we meet them, their kind, again at the gate as we board. Those schlepping a collection of bags that would strain a Sherpa are rolling a massive suitcase, sizable enough to contain the collected works of Shakespeare. And they're utterly outraged when the airline attendant predictably calls them out. Oh, the indignation, the play-acting of surprise as if suddenly they've been singled out to be subjected to a completely new and utterly arbitrary set of regulations. Wait, did I say them? Well, perhaps someone here has been one of those people. Not to put too fine a point on things, but I suppose I should say, perhaps someone else has also been that person. Just one more book, one extra jacket, another pair of shoes. I'm sure it will all fit until it doesn't. A couple of years ago, I was boarding a very long overdue flight, trying to sneak my not exactly dainty camera bag alongside a briefcase and a suitcase onto a flight, only to gum up the whole operation when I was called out for my offense. To add to my chagrin, once I was finally on board, I ended up directly across the aisle from an old friend who I had not seen for years. He immediately made the connection. You were that guy that was holding us up with three bags. Robert Frost captured a similar experience in his poem, The Armful. For every parcel I stoop down to seize, I lose some other off my arms and knees. And the whole pile is slipping, bottles, buns, extremes too hard to comprehend at once. Yet, nothing I should care to leave behind. Early on in Walden, Henry David Thoreau mocks fellow Concordians whose very lives are lived that way. I see young men, my townsmen, he writes, whose misfortune it is to have inherited farms, houses, barns, cattle, and farming tools. For, he notes, these are more easily acquired than gotten rid of. How many a poor immortal soul have I met, Thoreau smirks, well nigh crushed and smothered under its load, creeping down the road of life. Oh, such a sad fate, believes Henry Thoreau, to be encumbered by so much. Poet a la René Bossart offers an imaginative set of instructions to begin her lengthy poem about those enslaved Hebrews on the eve of their long-awaited emancipation. She begins with a simple line, "Pack nothing. Pack nothing. Bring only your determination to serve and your willingness to be free. To be free." This is a story of liberation, of a people formed into being by an inspiring, upsetting Passover tale. It's a mythic account, a complex, ambiguous, morally problematic tale, offering, as with all other such stories, a glimpse not so much into how life should be, but rather into how life is. It gives us no unsullied exemplars and is at least as psychologically complex as those Greek myths or the Star Wars and Indiana Jones episodes of George Lucas, with no more claim to historical veracity than any of these. And while there may be some inclined to take such tales literally, to believe their claims at face value, and accordingly to be variously inspired or incensed, I long ago stopped being one of them. Rest assured, no actual frogs, locusts, or people were harmed in the making of this myth. We revisit it not to shape belief, but to invite reflection, to remind ourselves both of our religious past and perhaps of who we are as human beings. To ask, how might this be our personal story? Might be. Most certainly not must be, for we are not that sort. Anyone here today wishing to be free? Freer, perhaps. Free of some situation, some impediment, some limitation, some restraint. The poet's summary may be operating instructions for us. Pack nothing. Bring only your determination to serve and your willingness to be free. That's not what happened in the Exodus account, however. Only days after their miraculous liberation, only days into their desert wandering, their extra baggage surfaces. Here we'll let poet Dorothy Sola have the say. Security became a thing of the past. Things got tough. Consumer goods were scarce. The people grumble. Would to God we had died in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and when we did eat bread to the full. The people grumble. If only we had some meat. Remember the fish we ate in Egypt for free? The cucumbers, melons, onions, garlic? Now all we ever get is manna. Can you imagine? They're actually nostalgic for Egypt. actually wishing they could go back, re-enter captivity, lower the gate, close the door, settle back into the old, oppressive, yet familiar way of things. Baggage. Holding on to deeply ingrained emotional baggage, dragging the past through the sands, pushing the past down the nowhere to be found road of their now liberated, not very liberated lives, unwilling, unable to let go. And here it is that today's two tales intersect. The other, that grounding, founding story for our Christian friends, colleagues, neighbors, beloved family members, some of whom are members of this congregation. The one about resurrection, about life and death and life. It too, a wildly imaginative, mythically rich account, one not easily flattened out into any kind of literalism. But if you actually read these sacred stories, you come to understand that there's less about alleluia than about anxiety. Miraculous grace tempered by mournful goodbyes. The stories about resurrection form one long farewell. None is more poignant than an encounter between Mary Magdalene and Jesus in the garden early on that first Easter. Mary, deep in grief over the death of her teacher and friend, comes to visit the tomb, sees a man she mistakes for a gardener. Then she recognizes him, Jesus, alive again. She reaches out to embrace him, but she hears those words that ring down through so much of the history of Western art, noli me tangere. Don't touch me. Don't cling to me. Don't try to hold on to me. Let me go. My teacher, former U.S. Poet Laureate Robert Haas, captures that poignance poetically. For Magdalene, of course, the resurrection didn't mean she'd got him back. It meant she'd lost him in another way. Do not hesitate to leave your old ways behind. Fear, silence, submission. That's how those poetic Passover instructions continue. Only surrender to the need of the time to love justice and walk humbly with your God. Then begin quickly. Before you have time to sink back into the old slavery, set out, she writes. Set out in the dark. When, 30 years after her departure, Universalist minister and leading suffragette Olympia Brown returned to her beloved congregation in Racine, Wisconsin, to preach. She rooted her remarks and words from a Hebrew psalm. Lift high the gates, open wide the doors, give liberty to all. Ours, she said, ours is a religion rooted in liberation, radical liberation. What's keeping you from being as free as you might be, What door still remains closed? What restraint still remains in place? It might be, as it was for those emancipated wilderness wanderers, it might be nostalgia. The longing to hold on to how things have been, to cling to some recent or distant past. Your energy is focused not forward, but back. Even Egypt somehow seems better than the road on which you now find yourself. It might be fear, a debilitating hesitation to take a risk, to claim a new possibility, to claim your fullest potential, to throw the doors wide open and set out. It might be resentment, holding on to an old hurt, weighted down by the desire for revenge, to exact some pain that might even the score. Or similarly, anger, bitterness, a daily dose of bile that causes you to belittle and deride others. It might be old habits, or maybe an addiction, an inability alone to conquer that which holds and hampers you. Perhaps shame, regret, embarrassment about some moral failing. It might be a failure of imagination, a refusal to invest in the spiritual discipline of deep probing, deep listening, deep praying that might open the door to some new, more fulfilling way of life. It may be greed, some insatiable desire for more and more that keeps you from experiencing the satisfaction of generosity. We cannot open wide the door to fullest freedom with, as Frost put it, an armful, stuff to which we are now clinging. We cannot open wide the door to fullest freedom while trying to hold on to what has been. As the lines of connection with my mom continue to fray, as dementia takes her further and further from the capacity to comprehend and connect, I find myself both profoundly sad and not infrequently sorting through so many old memories. Oh, the Easters of my childhood were wonder-filled. New clothes, a packed church, glorious music, a sense of deep connection and meaning. Then Sunday dinner with my beloved grandparents gathered around that familiar table. I cherish all of that. The memories sustain me in my perennial sadness. But I've long since let go of what Easter meant to them and to me. That faith unraveled for me years, decades ago, no longer proves sustaining or inspiring. I had to let it go. That was not easy. And there are still days I miss such assurance and hope. in its place over a long period of time, I have found my way to something else, something quite different, something that challenges me, that lays a claim on my life. It didn't, however, require me to sever all ties, to disconnect entirely, to burn every bridge back to the tradition of my childhood and adolescence. Instead, it has invited me to live imaginatively, to find in it the kind of meaning I now find also in poetry, a meaning of imagination and of beauty. Easter is no apex in the landscape of my spiritual life, but there is yet a place for it still, for me and for many of you, just as Passover, of a very different sort, still occupies a place in the spiritual lives of others of you here. The journey is for each of us to take for ourselves, to find both meaning and the experience of being fully alive where they are most robust. It's not for any of us either to prescribe or proscribe for any other. All we can do is let go for ourselves, open our own doors, and journey forth in our own faith. Again and again, I find myself returning to those guiding words of David White. They ring with special relevance today. You must learn one thing. The world was made to be free in. The world was made to be free in. Give up all other worlds except the one to which you belong. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive. Anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. It's too small for you.